Hello and welcome to Glitch Cube, we're a gaming podcast, and each week we take a deeper look into the art of video games. As always, I'm Christian.
I'm Chris.
And welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us once again as we dive further into the world of games. So this week we are going to be going over some updates, some games that we've been playing, because there's some interesting titles out there, some fun ones that we've been checking out, and talking about maybe some games that we have coming up next. So you can kind of anticipate that for the next update that we do as well. But yeah, there's been some there's a lot of like eye-catching titles coming out right now. This year has been very jam-packed with some crazy games that have definitely caught our attention, and there's some already huge contenders for Game of the Year, but right now it did feel kind of like a nice little break there. I don't know if you felt that same way, but there's a light lull, but it doesn't mean that nothing is coming out. It's just a lot of like simpler games to get into, nothing too crazy or complex are out right now, which is kind of nice. It's a nice little break, I would say. But yeah, why don't we just jump right into it? I have been playing a little bit more of Unicorn Overlord. I haven't beat it just yet, but still absolutely loving it. I mean, we've talked about it in nausea in the episode where we actually just discussed it completely. But yeah, it's still a fantastic title that I would definitely recommend to a lot of people out there. Anyone that's looking for something a little bit tactics-y, a little bit more strategy-based, someone that really enjoys tinkering with menus and messing around with job classes and just finding that right perfect party magic makeup, you know, that just that right synergy that just makes everything go that much more smoothly. That is Unicorn Overlord to me, and it's been fun doing that, because even the creating the different parties and all that, it feels like a puzzle, and just everything about this game feels like a puzzle, and I actually really, really enjoy that. Character development is still fantastic, and messing around with the beast people and everything, I'm like, this is cool. I just really am enjoying my time. So it's going to be a slow burn for me, because I'm just kind of letting it coast, and whenever I have time to go back to it, I'm just going to go back to it. And I don't feel like I need to rush that title at all. The longer I'm with it, the better, I think. But yeah, nothing too crazy with that update.
Yeah, I think when we last spoke about our last update, when I was playing Unicorn, I don't think I had finished it just yet. Because I'm looking at when I beat it, and I beat it after the episode, from what I can tell. But I loved it. I thought that game was really great. And I know some people kind of had some issues with like some of the dialogue, but I thought that for the most part, the game was really good. Like, it had that serious tone. You know, it wasn't Vanillaware's, like, in my opinion, best game, but it's high up there for me. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. Like, it was comforting. Just that gameplay loop was just so addicting that, like you said, it felt like a puzzle, because it's like, for the most part, you could just do a battle, not have to worry too much about their skills. Obviously, change their equipment, and you'd be fine. But then if you really want to get into the nitty-gritty and doing the skills and the different, you know, when are they going to pop? When are they going to do this? It's, like, insane. But you can literally create, like, just the face melters with some of these units, where it's just, like, anyone that hits them, like, won't take damage. Like, it was cool. After playing some, like, really long RPGs and going to that after, like, it felt really good.
Yeah. I like how there's not really much of a barrier of entry. Like you said, if you really want to dive into it, you can, but you don't have to get through the game. You can, you know, mess around with the party a little bit. It's like you have to, because it does get harder as it progresses, but you don't really have to go too deep into the rule system. Just make sure you have the best equipment, and like, the game kind of takes care of that part for you. But it is available for those that want to go deeper with it, which I really do enjoy that aspect. I think that's a great way of establishing it and of creating it. If everyone was forced to just really dive into the nitty gritty, I feel like obviously that would shy, or a lot of people would shy away from that because it is a complicated system. It really is. There's a lot of variables that are going on there. And the only way to figure out if it works is to test it. So it's a very special kind of gamer to really want to dive into those aspects of it. But so if you are not that person, that's okay. The game takes care of it too. So it's, I like the fact that it has it for, or it's simple for the people that don't want to go too crazy with the systems. But then if you really want to, you can dive further into it, which is nice. Nice touch.
Yeah.
All right. So what are you playing right now? Or what do you got?
So surprisingly, I haven't actually completed anything since the last update.
I've been kind of like, first episode this year that you've said that.
Yeah, I feel like it. Like, it's, you know, I think I have my hands in a lot of different pots, but, and I'm close to beating, like, I think three games. So, I mean, there is that. It's just, I'm not getting sidetracked, but it's just like, oh, I want to see this through. Oh, I want to do this. Or I'm too lazy to change the game, you know? Mm-hmm. But so for some of the smaller stuff that I've been kind of like playing around before I get to the, kind of the big two that's been taking up my time, I started playing Fallout 76, nice. Surprisingly, just because, you know, not, I mean, the show, I've only seen a few episodes, but it, you know, it's better now than when it first launched. I played it when it first came out and there were no NPCs and it felt very weird. Now there's, you know, people to talk to and it's surprisingly enjoyable. And I have been getting that like Fallout urge. So that's really nice. And then I just picked this game up today because it just came out today, which is the 26th. But Rusty's Retirement. It's a kind of an idle game, I guess you could say. But the thing I like about it is that it's a little different in that it can just plug into the bottom of your monitor or anywhere on your monitor or your screen, and you can do anything else, and it's just there. You know, a lot of these idle games, it, you know, they take up a screen or they're, you know, windowed mode, but there's still like a program there. This game, it's really cute how it just looks like a little bar across your screen. And, you know, you can be, like, I could be talking right now. And it could be running right under, you know, my recording software. Just chilling. And it, you know, looks like it's part of the, you know, background. Like, it's really interesting how they did this. Because I really like that. Because it doesn't, I don't want to say it doesn't look like a game, but it just doesn't look like what we're used to. I used to have a very, I don't want to say guilty, but it's like, I used to really love like idle and clicker games. I don't know, like back when Cookie Clicker came out, I'm not going to do the math. I know we had, I think it was like what, one of our first five episodes we talked about.
We talked about idle games.
Mm-hmm. And, so anybody wants to hear my obsession with Cookie Clicker, you know, go back to probably like episode three. But, you know, so when I usually skip over a lot of them, because a lot of them, it's just like, oh, here's a lot of numbers and screens. But this one's really, it's looks really cool. So I'm excited to kind of see where it goes. But, so for the two big games, the one that I'm currently really into is, Iaiden Chronicles, The 100 Heroes.
Yeah.
And I kickstarted this a while ago. I got my physical early. It seemed like everybody that backed it early kind of got it, but because I live pretty, I only live like, I don't know, maybe 5-6 hours away from where it was being shipped away from, I got it like super early.
That's cool.
Yeah, but I was so busy playing the other game, which I'll talk about later, that like for the first day or two, I didn't even end up playing it. But, so I started it, you know, it was kind of rough cause there was no patches and stuff, but, For people out there that don't know, it's basically the spiritual successor to the Suikoden games from, you know, PlayStation 1 to, you know, original, you know, same people that worked on it for the most part. And it feels as if it feels like of the era in good ways and bad. And I was super excited for this game. I'm still enjoying it. It's just, there's some things about it that aren't capturing me like I kind of hope they would. Suikoden games to me are very, they're kind of special, especially three, because it came out at a point where I was like, you know, I was young still, and I just replayed that game many times because I, you know, couldn't afford any other games. So I got really, really into it, even though like there wasn't like any story changes. It was just nice to keep playing it. But so when I saw this, I was super excited. And, you know, the combat's the exact same. The town building is a little different. It's, you're still recruiting people. So in this game, it's just 100 characters, not 108. But you recruit them, they join your army, which builds up this castle. And in the Suikoden games, they just join your castle and they set up shop, right? Or they set up whatever they do. In this game, it's they join your castle, but you have these blueprints where it's like, oh, I found these resources. I'm going to spend some money in this. So it's like you're like an upgrade tree, basically. Mm-hmm. And you're building up your castle and stuff, which, you know, I love that stuff. So in this aspect, I really like it a lot. And the story, it feels very same. I mean, there's not much I feel like you can do. Like, there's always going to be grand battles and stuff, which is kind of what the series is known for. But in a lot of ways, it feels pretty lighthearted.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't expecting this to be, like, super dark. Don't get me wrong. Like, but it just feels very light. And I agree with a lot of people that say they would probably, you know, give it a 7 out of 10 if we had to put a number on it, just because, like, it's a good game. It's just very plain.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I hear some people say boilerplate. And I'm like, oh, you know, that makes sense. Like, it's very, like, you get what you expect. There's nothing that's going to surprise you. Like, it really feels like, oh, this is a game from the PlayStation 1. Just, you know, graphics are a little bit better. But, yeah, I don't regret it. I'm about 40 hours in. Like, I'm going to see this game through. Like, it is like a comfort food. You know, I always bring this up with, like, JRPGs. It's like, they're my comfort food, and because this one literally feels like a game from 30 years ago at this point, 20 years ago, it's very comforting. So that's why, like, I stopped playing the other game and started playing this, because I was like, ooh, like, I can kind of shut my brain off and play. You know, the battles are going, there's an auto battle, which is nice, and so I'll do that, and I'll, like, listen to something in the meantime, and it's been cool. Like, I'm enjoying my time with it. You know, it's a good little break from some of these other big ones I have planned after I finish it.
Yeah, that's definitely one that I remember seeing a while ago and just really, really loving the way it looks. So I definitely want to check the Aiden Chronicles out for sure. It just seems like a fun little, it's just an easy game to get into. Nothing too crazy. Doesn't seem like it, at least. But I love the character design a lot. So
there's no deep systems in it. Like, it's, you know, for people out there that want, like, a good straight to the point RPG, like, you can't really go wrong with it. Like, it's very simple to get used to, which is nice.
Yeah. All right. The other game that I've been checking out, and I play through it through completion. I picked this game up mostly. Well, there's at first it caught my eye because of the artistic style of it. The style is very, very interesting, very unique. I absolutely love the way this game looks. And then after hearing about this story and the challenges that the developers went through to create this game, and just the cultural significance of this, honestly, it's a pretty big deal, right? Is Saviorless. This game was actually a lot of fun. It's incredibly short, but I kind of accepted that, knowing the challenges that the developers went through to actually create this title. This was first announced in 2016. It raised money, all that stuff, raised $10,000. It met its goal. They were going to make this. And this is the first indie studio coming out of Cuba as well. So there's a whole lot of really amazing things that are coming or based off of this game or surrounding this game. But then the hardships that they had to endure, about the money being taken away and the relationships between U.S. and Cuba hindered the ability for them to raise even more money. And then layoffs and people quitting, and even the fact that they had restricted access to things as simple as the internet. They had to use a very simplified version of Unity to make this as well. There was a lot of just pure challenges that they ran into. And they made something really, really interesting, I would say. Like I said, it's very short. It's only about 3 hours long. But it was fun. It was a really solid platforming game. The story itself is interesting. I would say that if you can tell that they needed a little bit more time or a little bit more resources to really flesh it out. But I think their lead artist left the project pretty early on. So they had to kind of just make do with what they had, unfortunately, because I would love to see this world fleshed out. I think one of the biggest things that I took away from this was the scenery. The scenery is gorgeous. There's a lot of really interesting details all over the place. The puzzles and the challenges were nothing too crazy, nothing really, really groundbreaking. But the concept of changing characters throughout the title or throughout this game made it a very interesting playthrough, because you start off as Antor. I think it's Antor is his name, which is just a boy. And the whole point is that you're trying to get to the Smiling Islands and become a savior. Doesn't really dive into too much as to why he wants to become a savior, but the characters in it are pretty interesting. So you're playing as Antor, but you're seeing it from the perspective of these three characters that call themselves the narrators. And they tell the same story over and over again. And the father figure, grandfather figure mentions to the kids that are narrators in training that they can't let the protagonist meet his goal because the story would then end. They're not allowed to let the story end. So that's why they're repeating the story over and over and over again. So I found that as a really interesting concept, especially from something like a platformer like this, or something that has some sort of challenges or death instantly, right? That you don't have a health bars or anything like that for while you're Antor at least. So when you die, the story is getting retold again. So I thought that was a really interesting idea that I wish that they could have expanded further on, but I get what they were trying to do, and I found that really interesting. But like I said, you play as different characters. So you start off as Antor, then you end up playing as Nento. So Nento is a hellbent, crazy, demon ruler guy, and you're able to actually attack things and you fight other saviors that are there. The reason why Nento gets introduced is because the grandfather narrator falls asleep, and one of the kids, or both the kids, kind of decide that they're going to tell their own story. So they start telling the story of Nento, and so you play as him. Then when the grandfather wakes up, now Nento's and Andor's story are now intertwined. So the fact that the boy was trying to get to the Smiling Island, now the Smiling Island is morphed because Nento, the demon, is there, and now he is taking control over the Smiling Island. So everything's all decrepit and things, and it's mixing and warping these ideas and these stories together. And then the third character that you play as is still Andor, but it's him as the savior version of himself, where you can actually kind of fight back. But there's a time limit in order in much and how long you can be this character. So that was an extra little challenge that I found really interesting. And it kind of played up this whole concept of what do you do? So even though you are called a savior, in order to extend your time limit as to how long you can stay the savior, you have to kill those things around you or destroy objects that are around you. And it releases like what seems to be a little bit of like life magic. So it was just a, I don't know, there's a lot of really interesting concepts in this title. And like I said, the art design, the character design is very, very well done. And for how small the team is and for how many challenges they went through, the gameplay was very, very smooth. I only ran into one kind of glitch, but it really wasn't that big of a deal. It was an audio glitch, so it wasn't even that like major. I just turned it down. The sound and music got distorted in one of the areas, and it was always in the same area. But that's not a big deal. It didn't mess up the gameplay at all. Didn't mess up as far as mechanics-wise go. The movement felt good for what it is. And yeah, it's just a fun short little game to play. But I think the big thing is just the significance of this title on its own, I think, is the most important part of it. So yeah, I really enjoyed my time with this. It was a really fun title to play through.
I really like the look of it. You know, that kind of like drawn look. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting that, it's surprising, but it's not surprising, you know, that it's like the first studio from Cuba. Because, you know, in this day and age, you kind of expect like a game studio to be like in every country, you know, at least making something. But mm-hmm. I guess you just kind of take it for granted. And it's also kind of interesting when you think about like how many countries are in this world, too. And it's like, there's definitely a country still that hasn't had a game come out yet, you know, oh, not yeah. counting Antarctica.
But just thinking about like the stories that they can tell from their perspective, like mm-hmm. what cultural like aspects they can throw into it, they can change the way that these genres feel, because this is just like a Metroidvania platforming game. That's all it really is when it boils down to it. But the story is what makes it interesting, and the viewpoint of the designer shines through. And I feel like that is where these games get really, really captivating. And that's why I'm really excited to see if there's anything else that will be coming out of Cuba soon, or any other countries that have not been able to make a game yet. The resources are there, and if someone is willing to make it, it will happen, and we'll be able to get a different viewpoint on these genres that have been said to, you know, be a little overplayed at times, because there's a lot of these games that fall into this genre, but the viewpoint is what makes it really interesting.
Yeah, I love when we can explore like different cultures like this. You know, it really does kind of breathe life into those, you know, overbeaten genres. It's mm-hmm. it's cool. You know, I love it. I love when I see a game from somewhere that's like, you know, what is like, what is this god, what is this being? Because it's like not what I'm used to, right? Like I know a lot of like mythology for like, you know, European, you know, and like
we know the Japan Greek gods, we know the Roman gods, right? That all those things have been overplayed because it's
yeah. And it's like I've learned to really look in like Middle Eastern like stuff like that, but I've never really looked much into like other regions, right? Like South America, Africa, stuff like that. So when I see something with a different, you know, culture added to it like that, I'm like, ooh, like that's really new. Like I want to learn about it. And it's fascinating. I just love learning about, you know, different places in the world and then learning like folk stories and stuff. It's awesome. Like I mm-hmm. wish, you know, there could be more games that really taught like folk history of all these places. Be awesome. So for me, my last big game, because there's been small stuff I've been dabbling into, but the game that really took up all my time after Unicorn and before Aiden was Baldur's Gate 3.
Nice.
Finally jumped into it. I just hit the door swinging, right? Like, I pretty much have, I think, two main missions left before, like, you know, the final section. And but I was just getting, I was like overwhelmed by some of the major side stuff to do, because, you know, it towards like throughout the game there's side stuff that'll help benefit you in the end, and a lot of these side ones that are left, I'm like, ooh, I know this is going to benefit me for the main story in different ways. And I'm just like, I want to just play a game where I can turn my brain off. So it's like, I got sidetracked from that. But, you know, playing through most of it, I can see now why people think so highly of it. And the combat, I finally got into it. You know, I'll be honest, like, I really don't like the D&D style of, like, having, like, you know, limited spell slots and stuff like that. But towards the end, I was able to enjoy it and be like, you know what, it is kind of cool because it does limit you. But, yeah, I love the different ways I can approach combat. Like, there's this, when I looked it up later on, people list this as like top five hardest fight in the game. Mm-hmm. And it's for a companion, I'll put it that way. I feel like all I have to say is that and people will probably know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And I found this was just dumb luck, but I just threw daylight in the middle of the stage. And for some reason, it just like kind of stunned. It, like, skipped the whole cutscene. Because when I first went in there, my first try, I got my ass handed to me. And I was like, what if I just throw this daylight orb in the middle of the stage? Because, you know, it just makes sense in the situation. And it worked. It stunned it. I didn't have to deal with the cutscene. I didn't have to lose a character in the process. And the battle was still somewhat annoying because there were so many goddamn enemies. But
there's a lot of ads in that one.
Yeah. And I was able to do it. Easy peasy. And I was like, ha, 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 I feel smarter than all these other people at the struggle. But, you know, that's the thing I really liked about this game, is that there's so many different outcomes and ways you can handle fights. Like, for me, my main team, I'm a gold dwarf paladin, right? So I just broke my oath because of that stupid questline. But I think I read that I can fix that. I think I can pay like 1,000 gold or something and fix my oath, which is kind of nice.
No, that's not bad at all. And by the end of the game, you have so much gold, it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, like I have a bunch now, because it's like I don't really feel the need to buy so much equipment. Like, I have pretty good equipment. I feel like I have better equipment for the people I don't use, which is kind of a bummer. But
yeah, I had some really good stuff for people and I just never wanted to put them in my party.
Well, the thing is I would love to have them in my party, but it's just like I'm so comfortable with who I use. Like, I feel like Gale has been the one I've always had my party just because I like his magic. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's very strong with AoE and like single target, so it's just perfect. And then I switch out Shadowheart a lot just because, like, I have a lot of healing spells too.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is a lot of my healing spells is like you have to like touch them, mm-hmm. so like range kind of sucks for me. But her character is nice because she can just kind of like be well rounded. But I usually switch her out for like potions. Yeah, like I have really good equipment on her, so like that's why I keep her in the party too, because I feel obligated. But if I don't use her, I usually use Karlach, and I was using Lazelle. Is that how you say his name?
Mm-hmm.
And I was using her a lot because surprisingly I liked how her character played. But so I'd switch between those three, and then I'd always have Asterion just because, like, I didn't know about the build. I remember you telling me about this build after, and I was like, oh God, I want to try that. And I looked it up, and everyone's like talking about that build too. And I'm like, oh, like I thought I was cool with my like sneak build with two bonus actions, like just murdering with like a knife. And I'm like, oh no, like I need to try this broken build. And it's, you know, the game is like, it's fascinating because I've always been interested in these kind of games, but I just never felt like I would have the time to devote to them. So I just never really gave them a chance. But I love it. I mean, granted, going back to some of these older CRPGs would be a little difficult, you know, comparing it to this game just because of all the quality of life. But I love it. Like, I really like it. I don't think I'll do a second playthrough, at least anytime soon, just because, like, it's a lot of time. But, and I kind of looked up, like, oh, what's the Dark Urge? You know, what's a little different with them? And it honestly sounds amazing how different things change.
It's
but,
so chaotic. There's a lot that happens.
I played, like, my first, like, when I first was playing it, I played as a Dark Urge, and I got to, like, a little more than halfway in Act 1, and I was like, I want to play good, because, yeah, it is pretty chaotic. Like, I felt like I would screw myself over on a first playthrough. But, yeah, I love it. I just feel like everywhere I go, you just find something new, and it's... I love exploration in games, and I feel like this game does it so well. And it never feels... It feels overwhelming, but in a good way.
Right.
And I think that's what I like about it.
That's a really good way of putting it. It is overwhelming in a very good way because there's just so much going on. The world is so alive, but it's fun. Like, that's what it makes it so exciting and interesting to explore around. I will say I did run into the same issue. A lot of people do the final act. There's just a lot going on. There's a lot of side missions and the whole... things being on a timeline or an invisible timeline that you can't see in the background, it felt like that kind of went away in Act 3. So I don't know, after every single fight, I just long rested. It didn't really change anything. So I never felt the issue of not having enough spell slots because there, like, I think that was the big thing. Like Act 1, Act 2, I really felt that like if I long rested too much, then some bad things would happen and I would miss out on a bunch of stuff. Yep. But in the final act, I never felt that. The things are waiting for you to activate them. So it felt a little bit more laxed, I guess. And I don't think I really missed out on much of anything after reading up on it further after my playthrough. So it, I don't know, there's something kind of weird about that. And I think the moment I figured that out was whenever I was told to go to a certain area and it's super important and I need to go there now. And I said, okay, cool, I'll be back in 10 hours. And I just left. I was like, I'm just going to keep going until I get a warning. Because what was nice about that game is switching between acts, it gave you a warning that you might not be able to come back or certain things happen. Or you get that little hint in the dialogue, but that never happened. So I just kind of kept exploring. And I did all the side missions in Baldur's Gate before actually going back to that first area in Act 3 and talking to those people. I was like, okay, I guess I'll go back and do the story now. Sure. But I just like explored and did everything for like 10, 15 hours and then went back. I was like, okay, whatever. That was fun. But that's the only thing I will say is that it did, which was kind of nice actually, because it relieved the pressure of that timeline, that invisible timeline that was there. So it did let me actually explore and have fun in the world and just try out new things and all that and see what was available to me. So that was nice because I'm wondering if there was anything that I might have rushed in Act 1 because of that or if there's anything I did miss out on. I don't think I did because I was pretty damn thorough and I was there for a long time, but I'm just always curious that there might have been one or two things that I might have missed or overlooked because of that. Didn't talk to that one NPC that had some crazy quest or crazy item because of that all. So yeah, but it was fun. There's a lot of really cool hidden things in there and I absolutely loved my time with it. I had the dog and the owlbear cub in my camp, which I loved. It was great seeing them play together. It's so adorable. it's wonderful. But yeah, I mean, killing the mom is sad, but yeah. Anyway, now there's a lot of great things about that game. Absolutely love my time with Baldur's Gate. And yeah, I mean, it feels like everybody just sings praises about that game now. But it's, like I said, it's tough to go back to that style. Baldur's Gate 3 has really changed the way that those games are going to be looked at. Everything is going to be compared to that now. That is now the new staple. So I'm very curious to see what the next studio is going to do if they're trying to make a game in that genre, or how much pressure they actually feel. I kind of feel bad for them because that's a lot to live up to. It's rough. But yeah, no, that was a fantastic, fantastic game. Well, all right. I think that's going to do it for us this week. I hope you guys have enjoyed this little update. It's a quick one, nothing too crazy, but you know, there's some good catching up that we were able to actually do in this very brief lull in this year's of gaming, because there's still a lot of great games coming out, but just simpler ones, easy ones to get to latch onto. But anyway, we'll talk to you guys next week with some more games. But until then, bye for now.